don't know much about GCPF, obviously.
So, I cited two examples in which Japan already co-hosted workshops with Taiwan and the United States. So they are involved as a host. I don't know of any instance in which Japan has worked together with Taiwan on disaster response. There certainly is potential for that. Taiwan usually comes in a disaster response mode after the emergency. So it's not the immediate first responder to an emergency like the U.S. military would be, but it would come in afterwards to help perhaps with, you know, resettlement or, you know, health issues, things like that. I'm not even sure. There were some efforts, some, I don't know if we'd call them efforts, there were some instances where the U.S. and Taiwan have simultaneously supplied some relief efforts. I don't even know whether there was coordination. But like there was one in Haiti where the United States provided, I think it was a C-130 to help Taiwan to deliver supplies. So that's one case in which there at least was assistance. I don't know if you'd really call it advanced coordination. Taiwan really wanted to get involved and couldn't get there. So, and the United States provided the support. But that's, I mean, that is different than, you know, sort of real coordination exercises, having the capability to deploy together. I'm sure Taiwan has not done that. And you know, the question is whether or not Japan and Taiwan would want to engage in that kind of effort, but there could be some natural complementarities.
Hey, over here. Sorry, can we grab the microphone? Yeah. Over here? Thank you.
Where's the microphone?
For me to just talk about?
It's coming. It's coming.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry, Maria. Hi, my name is Ann Vroom, and I'm just a visitor. But I wanted to ask, when or if do you think that China might take the pressuring to a different level with regard to for-profit companies operating in Taiwan? As those same companies at the same time want to do more of being in China to sell to China, at what point might China start to say, well, if you want to sell in China, then you have to pull out of Taiwan?
You want to take that?
I'll take that one because I was here for the first panel where I think that touched on a little bit. Okay. I mean, you can imagine that happening, but I think specific pressure on companies to get out of Taiwan is the price of doing business in China. I think that would be sort of secondary to a much sharper deterioration in cross-strait relations. I think China's approach in that general area has been much more to pressure multinational companies to posture alongside, to align with China's position on the status of Taiwan. So the stuff we talked about in the morning panel about, you know, you can't list Taiwan as a country on where you have hotels if you're Marriott, the NBA fracas, things like that. So I think actually it's a more broad brush kind of an attempt to influence expressions rather than particularly to hit them for that. I mean, I think if companies got way out front in being identifiably, in some sense, pro-Taiwan rather than really doing business both places, you could see where somebody might get picked off.
I don't know whether you discussed it in the first panel, but there have already been three times that Beijing has threatened to impose sanctions on U.S. defense companies that sell weapons to Taiwan. So we've just been to the third time, and we have yet to see that actually implemented. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm here, so questions continue. Okay, there was one back here.
Yes.
You gotta be nimble at the theater center.
My name's Chloe, and my question is, considering the deteriorating relation between Korea and Japan, do you see Taiwan has the potential to maybe utilize its void and
I don't think that Taiwan has the potential to use that particular deteriorating relationship to reap advantages for itself. There are steps that Taiwan has taken that has damaged its relations with Japan, And if I were giving Taiwan advice, I would say, focus on implementing the right policies, like not holding, you know, getting referenda passed by your people that then make it impossible to import the agricultural goods from the Fukushima area, which would really, I think, damage relations with Japan. That will be in place for 3 years now. And I don't think there's any way that Taiwan can capitalize on tension between U.S. allies. That's, I don't see how that serves Taiwan's interests.
So we have one here.
Here?
That one, and we might collect two and then two.
Let's just collect.
Jared Fernandez, teaching history of Taiwan at George Mason. I want to come back to the point of loss of diplomatic relations for Taiwan, particularly in the South Pacific, Solomon Islands, Kiribati. Those are portrayed as being just a loss for Taiwan if you look at it in a narrow sense. But in the broader sense, the underlying reason is basically Chinese intent to have a broader strategic presence in the Pacific. Australia is waking up to it. New Zealand just today put out a defense paper also highlighting that. So how would you assess the Chinese intent to extend its presence in the Pacific in particular as related to Taiwan?
And the second is this gentleman there. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Deng Huiyu with China Review News Agency in Hong Kong. My question is for Bonnie. I know you just came back from Xiangshan for in Beijing, and I'd like to know what kind of impression or sensation did you take by, you know, communicating with the Chinese scholars and officials, particularly in terms of Beijing's approach to Taiwan in the next, you know, some period, next several months, 1 or 2.
Okay. We might turn back to the panelists, and then we'll take a lightning round of the last two questions and wrap up if we, yeah, very lightning round, but if you'd like to.
I don't really have a lot to say about South Pacific, but I would say that there are two ways to look at Chinese Communist Party strategy. One is geostrategic, for example, on the South Pacific, as you were mentioning. The other one, more political in nature. Again, the zero-sum game about legitimacy. The campaigns to be able to poach diplomatic allies of Taiwan could be viewed as targets of opportunity, with the constant effort to be able to develop business relationships with next could be who knows, Marshall Islands or other locations, Haiti, for example. It's not just South Pacific, but in general, I would, there certainly could be a rationale for a geostrategic rationale for South Pacific, but in this case, I would tend to look more toward targets of opportunity and just basically being able to put pressure on the current, especially the current government to be able to make concessions on what a one China principle or whatever.
Yeah, I guess I'd just add to that, I mean, sort of why choose, right? You can sort of do both, but if you look at the sequencing of loss of diplomatic allies, it seems that it's up until now, and it's been driven more by sort of calibration, right? Poach the big ones, Panama, Nicaragua, things like that. Squeeze Europe down, you know, Europe's always smaller, and then squeeze Africa down to one. It seems to me that it's you know, kind of not going to put the maximum pressure on, but sort of poke hard enough. And it's kind of hard to read because, of course, the two concentrations of diplomatic allies are Latin America and the Caribbean and Oceania, and Latin America and Caribbean, at least at this point, does not have a major strategic role for China.
So I'm not really sure I learned anything specific in my recent trip to China about their approach to Taiwan, but I think that the expectation in Beijing is that Tsai Ing-wen is likely to win. They're looking at the polls. They recognize that support for Han Kuo-yu is not growing. They see what is happening in Hong Kong is really helping Tsai Ing-wen. I think that there is a growing sentiment among some of the sort of more hardline experts that peaceful development as a strategy has not worked, having listened to the things that Han Guoyu and other KMT leaders are saying, like, you know, Han's statement of no one country, two systems over my dead body, and the recent statement, which I think is one of the most remarkable statements that has come out of Han Guoyu yet, it's part of the cross-strait policy statement, which has said that this is not a problem, our relationship across the strait is not a problem that our generation should solve, that it should be passed down to the next generation. And all of us who pay attention to the major statements that have been made on this issue know that Xi Jinping's very first statement was, this is not something that should be passed down from generation to generation. So this was almost pushing back against Xi Jinping and saying, don't pressure us. We are not going to pursue political dialogue, one country, two systems, even if the KMT wins. So I think that there is a sense, a growing sense in the PRC, that they may not have the willing partner that they used to have in Taiwan in the KMT. So I think there's concern about the future. Who are they going to be able to work with? So it goes beyond just another 4 years of Tsai Ing-wen and DPP rule.
That suggests a zone of overlap of a second generation. Not our generation, not generation.
Okay, so we might take just the last two questions, and then I'll give each of the panelists about 30 seconds to respond. There was one person who had a hand up right in the back, and then Dr. Sutter at the front.
Hello, Neil Silver, question for anybody. There are 500,000 to 1 million Taiwan resident in China, which is, you know, upwards of 5% of the population of Taiwan. As a figure, it's kind of extraordinary, but from your point of view, is this just a totally inert factor in the relations between the PRC and Taiwan? Is it a net asset to either side? Are there factors which go either way? Or is it a ballast in the relationship, or at least a canary in the coal mine that's really starting to go south? Is it a factor?
Thanks very much. Just a quick question. Just a day or two ago.
Jimmy. We had a question.
Yeah.
So Bob was the other question. Yeah, sorry, because you had your hands up before. Apologies.
No, it wasn't yours.
It was.
Bob Sutter, George Washington University. Just a quick question, probably for Mark, but it may be Bonnie and Jacques may have an idea on this too. In my section, I was supposed to talk about U.S. support for Taiwan and military, and the New York Times ran a piece 2 days ago about the U.S. Defense Department's dependence on Taiwan for chips.
Yeah.
And we didn't touch on that at all.
Yeah.
And how big a deal is that for the Defense Department? In other words, you have this, it was, you know, the way that the account illustrated that we just, the Defense Department is very heavily dependent on Taiwan for the chips that it uses. otherwise it's going to be a very, they don't have other means of building the chips to run the machines that they have. So I just wonder if your experience, you've dealt with this kind of issue, and or Bonnie may know something about this. I didn't, and so there, I didn't talk about it, and okay. So I admit my flaw, but anyway, I just wanted to lay that out.
Sure, I can tackle the second one. Maybe somebody else can go after Neil's question. But how concerned is the I'm not aware of any detailed study that's been done that's really broken down the supply chain, done supply chain analysis to see how dependent the U.S., both U.S. DOD as well as the U.S. defense industry, how dependent they are upon Taiwan for components, particularly microelectronic components. It may be superficial. I think RAND has done a study, but that's a long time ago. But what really needs to be done is there need to be more concern within DOD or National Security Council or whoever to be able to really get a handle on supply chain security, if all the way to the point of perhaps thinking about, at a fairly senior level, having a U.S. assessment team that goes over to be able to look at, do a major study on supply chain security and the role that Taiwan plays in the supply chain, and also the establishment of a bilateral committee on supply chain security and defense industrial cooperation between the U.S. and Taiwan, led by either DOD or NSC.
Now, I would not be surprised if China is more dependent on chips from Taiwan than the U.S. is, right?
Possibly.
Huawei is extremely dependent on TSMC, right? And they just increased, I think, the percentage that they're going to be procuring from TSMC. So as soon as the tariffs hit, you know, TSMC did their due diligence, you know, all the lawyers looked at it, and they said, you know, it's okay, we can still sell to Huawei, and the U.S. has allowed that so far, right? So this is not only a concern for the U.S., it's also a concern to China. My guess is that China is even more vulnerable than we are. Great question, Neil. I'm not really sure how to answer it, because there probably aren't any good polls that tell us about the attitudes of citizens. You know, you have students from Taiwan who go to China because they feel that the education will help them, they'll get a better job, maybe they'll have a better career, but they still think that Taiwan is their country. They don't become PRC citizens, and they don't even think of themselves as part of the PRC. But without that kind of data, I mean, I don't know exactly how to answer it, and I would be surprised if Taiwan has even internal data like that. Some of the people who live in China live there like 6 months out of the year, right? And then they come back to Taiwan. You have a lot of that. You'll have like businessmen who have like families on both sides of the strait. So I would guess it's really hard to track. Shelley Rigger would be a good person to ask that question.
Yeah, I mean, Shelley's been doing a lot of work on this question of attitudes, you know, my understanding is it's not simple, not surprisingly. And I think we got a few things. I mean, one is it's done nothing apparently to dent the ever upward march of Taiwan identification of people, particularly younger people in Taiwan. Familiarity has, you know, bred, I think, both habituation and contempt. So it's a sense that it's part of what you have to do, but there's not a lot of soft power appeal. And I think one of the interesting questions is what it does to Taiwan politics, because there's sort of folk wisdom that a presence on the mainland or defense of the mainland, whether it's people being there or broader economic relations, creates leverage. On the other hand, the suspicion of overly close ties is kind of a political close kiss of death with at least a big chunk of the electorate in Taiwan. So I think it's really become quite messy. But I think the belief that it was inexorably going to create this great tractor beam toward integration, that at least has not happened.
Okay, well, apologies for running a couple of minutes over, but this was a fascinating discussion. I hope you'll join me in thanking our panelists, and thanks also to all of the terrific questions from the audience. Mm-hmm. Thank you.